Welcome, lethargic layabouts, to episode 82 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where all geeks are in ground state and all the molecules are not very excited. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And today we have a, let's not call it demotivational, but slow, meandering, and not particularly focused episode of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast that centers on the topic of what? Lack of motivation, would you say, Brian?
Yes. Yes, I would say a lack of motivation.
Excellent. So, that being the case, I guess, I guess we should start things off with our weekly geekly, geekly weekly roundup. Brian, I don't imagine you've been up to much, but why don't you let the audience know what you've been up to in the past week?
The only thing even semi-productive that I actually did was attend Small Business Saturday.
Oh.
I enjoy that. I like the kind of counter Black Friday feel of it. Went to my favorite bookstore, second edition, nice little used bookstore. They have a new cat whose name is Gatsby. Thought that was kind of cool. Stopped by AGS, the good old adventure game store. Picked up something fairly pricey there. Felt good about myself. And, oh, I did make it to Tate's eventually. I made it to Tate's on Small Business Saturday, which it's not really a small business anymore, but, you know, it counts. And the rest of my week, I'm not even joking. This is perfect for the episode. I sat around organizing my comic book collection. Yeah, I've just been piling stuff up in a corner for a little while too long, and it got way out of sorts. So it was time to put everything in the right size bag and make sure everything was taped down nice and tight, and put like with like, and start chronologically ordering them. And next thing I knew, it was like 3 days later.
And a great use of time that could have been better spent, which is really perfect for this episode. I'm sure you did that with this week's episode in mind.
I was gonna, you know, be much more productive, but I decided I'd take one for the team to make this more authentic. I almost never do that unless I, you know, have to for the cast.
Well done, sir, and appreciated. That pretty much it?
That's pretty much it, sadly.
All right, well, I tried to do as little as possible in keeping with today's theme, but I ended up doing a bunch of stuff anyway. First of all, I kept up my yearly tradition by going to Epcot on Black Friday, that being the day after the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States, for those of you who are not from the United States in our audience. Most people on Black Friday go shopping, thereby causing retailers' balance sheets to go from red to black, meaning they make all their money. I did not contribute to retailers' bottom line this weekend. I contributed to Disney's bottom line, however, by going to Epcot and trying out my new Magic Band, which is a cool RFID-powered band that lets you buzz onto all the rides and play the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game and get in and out of the gates and make all your purchases if you link a credit card to it. It was pretty cool. I kind of geeked out on many technical fronts. So the Disney front I already mentioned. I also geeked out on kind of the, like, genetics front. I'm not really a geneticist or have any interest in genes, but I finally spit in a tube and submitted my saliva for gene analysis with 23andMe. So they are going to uncover my long-lost, more than likely non-existent Native American roots. I don't know. Do you have an ancient family legend of some Indian blood of your own, Brian?
I do, actually. I think I'm like 164th Cherokee or something like that.
Maybe for Christmas I'll get you one of these kits so you can find out if there's any truth to that. Because I think a lot of old families have such a rumor. And that's my main motivation, plus kind of the tech factor of having my genome analyzed, or my DNA analyzed, I guess I should say, kind of sucker me in. So I will report back on that when I get the results. Let's see. I also, on the transit front, a double geek out. I got to ride the Tri-Rail commuter train this past weekend up to a business engagement I had on Sunday, a few towns north of here. always enjoy taking public transit. It's such a rarity in our area here in South Florida. And tonight I attended a meeting just before the episode on transit-oriented design, wherein they talk about how our home city of Fort Lauderdale is going to embrace transit-oriented design as all these new modes of public transit that we're standing up come online. So we're going to have trains and light rail and all kinds of awesome things, and buildings, businesses, residents, etc., designed around that infrastructure. So Fort Lauderdale, Florida, town of the future, I'm excited to say. Which is a perfect segue into tonight's episode, which concerns, I guess, the future, the present, maybe a little bit of the past. Really, tonight we wanted to talk about motivation, specifically motivations for geeks like us, nerds like us, dreamers like us, let's say. It's not uncommon to hear about the underachieving, unmotivated nerd and or geek. This person who's pretty intelligent, and if that individual only applied himself or herself, could achieve great things. But instead, they're more likely to sit around playing video games or spend all their time at Star Trek conventions or writing fanfic, etc. Although I would say even writing fanfic is more than a lot of people seem to manage. And I blame it in part on all the cool stuff there is to consume out there. I mean, who has time to sit down and write a fantasy novel when there are so many great fantasy novels to read? Who has time to finally sit down and work on a video game or try to enter that industry when you've got such a huge backlog of great games to play? Do you understand where I'm coming from with this, Brian?
Yeah, man, been there. Been there for about 12 years total.
So you've had projects brewing in your mind that you've never quite been able to get around to?
I used to be a writer, man, once upon a time. I had all kinds of cool, like, fantasy stories sketched out and was going to do this character and that character and some good stuff. But then I discovered MMOs.
A massive time stink, the MMO, and only contributes to the backlog of life, in my opinion. The MMORPG is largely responsible for my GPA suffering while I was in a university, as well as my failure to, even putting aside productive endeavors, my failure to like beat a bunch of video games. I mean, I think I missed, for example, most of the PlayStation 2's life cycle thanks to EverQuest. I played that so obsessively for a while.
Yeah.
So let's attack this on two fronts. I mean, let's start on the consumption side. Do you agree with me that there's just too much to do? Too many video games, too many board games, too much to read, too much to watch, too many, you know, movies, shows, anime. I mean, it's overwhelming how much choice there is out there.
I had a little bit of an epiphany 2-3 weeks ago. As you know, I'm a fan of that Kickstarter phenomena. And I was watching, I don't remember the name of it now, Shadows Over Brimstone or something like that. This absolutely amazing looking steampunk cowboy Cthulhu horror story board game. It was not cheap, but it was such an amazing deal. It was like, I think, 14 expansions and 60 figures and all this other kind of stuff that was included because of the stretch goals. And I was so excited about it. And I was trying to share, I think I mentioned it to you, and you were just like, dude, when are we going to play it?
Yes.
And I was like, you're right. Fuck this shit.
Yeah, man. I mean, I find myself foregoing purchases finally. Like, oh, I really want this hot new game that came out, but I've got 15 other hot new games I still haven't played. And maybe that's the beginning of, you know, putting the brakes on just out of control consumerism. I'm not sure if that's going to lead to a more productive life, but definitely a life wherein I consume a little less prodigiously and with a little more of an eye toward actual meaningful consumption, if there is such a thing. So what is it that drives us? So I know you and I both, we have huge stacks of, let's just stick to console video games, lying around our homes, and yet we still run out and buy new stuff. What is it that drives us to do that when we've already got such a backlog of games we could probably spend a couple of years just playing those?
I blame in part my taste in genre. Once upon a time, if you didn't get the latest Natsume game when it first came out, you'd have to pay like $9,000 for it, you know, 3 weeks later, because it was limited and assholes would buy it up and sell it on eBay. So there was an urgency. You had to go out and get it. You had to pre-purchase it. You had to make sure you had it for when you were ready to play it. And I still have, speaking of the PlayStation 2, I still have completely unopened collector's editions of games that I bought so that I could play them when I got around to it.
JRPGs and the like?
JRPGs and JRTBS, turn-based strategy games.
Right, whatever that acronym is. So there's a sense of scarcity, whether it's real or imagined, that leads us to acquire so that we can have it in our hoard when we get around to it later, I guess, right? And that's probably a stroke of marketing genius on the part of the marketers, frankly, who are suckering us in to get us to spend our money on stuff. They don't care if we ever play the game. They just care that we plonk down our money, right?
Yeah, probably the marketers. I mean, the programmers might care, but the marketers don't.
Right.
As long as we buy it.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine who calls me with all the hot deals and hot limited editions, and he's always tipping me off on rare games coming out along those lines. And I find that I'm down to following maybe one in three of his recommendations, just because I only have so much room for statues and tchotchkes and all kinds of stuff that come with limited edition games, for one thing. But additionally, I'm never going to get around to playing this stuff. And I have a lot of rare sealed games, but is this stuff really an investment at the end of the day?
I was talking with someone about this not long ago. Strangely, it can be an investment. I think there's actually some like data to back this up. Do you know what the best investment in the last, I want to say 20 years has been? Stock market included, gold included, anything included?
Definitely real estate.
Magic cards.
Are you serious?
Totally serious.
Magic the Gathering cards.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So if you had your original Magic the Gathering cards from back in, what, the 90s, you'd be sitting on a gold mine right now?
Yeah, I mean, if you had a quantity of them, yeah. I mean, you got to look at the price, too. Like, I paid, you know, $3 for them, and now they're worth, like, $3,000 or whatever, so that's a huge increase.
That's pretty incredible. I did not know that. But now that it's known that these cards are going to be worth money, doesn't that sort of take away the collectability? Because now everybody's trying to collect them?
It probably diminishes it. I don't think it takes it away entirely. The problem with it is the same thing as comic books. Now, if you buy a comic book, it will be collectible immediately because people want it to hoard. And then, you know, in 50 years, it'll be somewhat collectible. But, you know, in the near future, it'll be mass-produced trash.
Sure, sure. And let's consider, too, the impact that digital distribution is going to have on this hoarding behavior. Are you going to be as apt to rush out and get the digital download of this hot new game or this hot new comic book, knowing that there is no real scarcity?
Take a Dragon Crown. Is that the latest in the Princess Crown series?
That sounds right. Yes.
Yeah, take Dragon Crown, for instance, knowing that it's available for digital purchase. I didn't rush out. I still don't own it. It's like 3 months old.
Okay, so with niche video games and maybe comics and maybe to a certain extent cards, there's a physical scarcity that in the case of the former two, but definitely not cards, can now be overcome through digital distribution. Let's now step over to something which has always been distributed physically, but is never really regarded as scarce. Let's talk about books, novels. You are a much more avid reader than I am. You've got a massive book collection. I assume you've read all those books. Every time I come over, you're acquiring more, and I presume you're reading them.
I'm slightly behind the curve. I own probably about 50 books that I haven't read right now, just because I've gotten the Goodwill habit.
Oh, they're so cheap, you just can't pass them up.
Right. I mean, you can get hardback for like 75 cents on Saturdays, where they do like half off the entire store. So I bought more than I can read, but I'm working my way through the pile.
Well, I guess that's my question. So you're motivated by like cheap price, but you actually are more so than video games and other things you do, and board games, what have you. You do actually get around to reading your collection of books.
It is slightly different for me. Reading is not so much a hobby for me. Like, there's not like a book that I'm, oh, excited, I really want to find out what happens in this or anything like that. I will read soup cans if you hand them to me. I read. I have read my entire life just anything I can find. I don't think you could create a shortage of that. There's not a series that I feel like I have to read or anything like that. I would just pick up the next book.
And so the enjoyment of the activity is your motivation there, as opposed to, say, collecting.
The enjoyment, and I really regard reading as self-improvement. I mean, I think we talked about this with Rick. You don't really differentiate what you read from your memories. So you're able to open yourself to points of view that you have no other way of opening yourself to. And I think that's just a part of you for the rest of your life.
Well, I'm glad you said that and brought that up. I do remember us discussing this in a previous episode. I think that I consume media because, in part, the teenager in me that was always going to create something great rationalizes it as, oh, this is inspiration, this is motivation. I'm going over all this existing material to find my idea and my spark that's going to motivate me to create something great.
I think that's very valid to a point.
How so?
Well, back to my point, by expanding yourself, you are more able to handle your own ideas. You are more able to see your own ideas through to completion, to a more important revelation. At some point, you have to stop and start. You have to get off and get on.
Like, stop acquiring and start producing.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I wonder. Like, are we trying to fill the same hole with different filler? So is the consumption, is the acquisitiveness, the desire to consume, sort of a vain attempt to fill that need to create? You know, do we feel like, because look at this massive hoard I'm building, and in a sense I'm creating something. I'm creating a massive hoard of treasure. I'm not actually creating the treasure itself, but it's all mine.
I don't know if it necessarily fills the same hole. I think there's an ease in consuming that kind of takes away from the urge to create. I think it's comfortable.
Ah, and so you think that there is a direct detriment to the creative side when the acquisitive side is given the driver's seat?
When it's left in the driver's seat for too long. I don't think there's anything wrong with it being in the driver's seat, but, you know, it's got to take a nap, let you drive.
All right, so let me ask you this. How does one go about saying, hey, I'm off the consumption treadmill. This is it. Starting today, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write my awesome novel or you know, embark on whatever creative journey it is I've always dreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, feel free to say, well, because I haven't done it, I can't offer that advice. But what do you imagine would kick you in the butt enough to be like, all right, I'm putting down the books and writing my own?
I had a teacher in university. She was a really wise woman, and she kind of affected me. What she said was basically disconnect your television, disconnect your internet, throw out all your games, and set limits for yourself. Like, I'm going to do this today for 1 hour, no matter how bad it is. And you just start. And with none of those distractions, just not allowing yourself those distractions and understanding that you are going to finish 1 hour, no matter how bad it is, no matter how good or bad it is, it's possible to get there. And basically it's, you know, the first step, and then the second step is the next day, and it hopefully is better. And the third step hopefully is better. And it's just about killing old habits and creating new ones.
So getting into the habit, say if you're a writer, of just writing even if you throw away what you did at the end of it, writing for 1 hour every day, let's say.
I think it's the same for anything. I think, you know, a painter can sit down and paint and hate the painting. Oh, my God, this is shit work. Yeah, but you created. That's a painting. That exists now because of you. Even if you're not super proud of it, even if you're never going to sell it, even if no one's going to like it on Facebook.
Okay, and the same would go, like, if I wanted to create some killer app as a programmer. I could sit down and just bang out a bit of code for an hour every night. Just block aside an hour where that's what I focus on.
How many Hello World apps have you ever bought?
True, none. But they were created, weren't they?
Like practically every single programmer's first project, right?
Yes. But you really hit a great point there, which is the purpose behind creation, right? So you could say, well, the purpose behind the Hello World program is to learn how to program. Okay, and that leads to some commercial success down the line when you get a job as a programmer, say. But for the writer, for the person to sit down and write or to paint or to record music, to do it, something that we traditionally associate with creativity, there has to be a motivation. And I know they tell you, oh, well, you should do it for the love of doing it. And that's splendid. But I think most people get discouraged because most people don't just want to do what they love. They want to be able to survive while doing what they love. And unfortunately, in our culture, that means somehow realizing a profit from your efforts, you know?
I struggle with this, and I have struggled with this in the past. I think you were involved in it. Once upon a time, I was going to either do what I loved or sell out and do what I knew I was good at. And I wound up doing what I loved. And I do not at all make my living at that. I have a horrible toiling 9-to-5 that allows me time to do what I love.
So that's enough for you. I mean, are you willing to endure a life of the horrible 9-to-5 as long as you've got that time to do what you love on the side?
Yeah. I mean, it works out. I have found the more you monetize something, the less you like it. Once upon a time, I was so into video games and so into video games. I owned, let's see, NES, Sega Master System, Super NES, Genesis, Sega CD, Sega 32X, Atari Jaguar, the Atari Jaguar CD expansion, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, CDI, 3DO, just name it. If it came out before like 1995, I owned it. I started working in video games. I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited to work in video games. I stopped playing them. I can't stand them anymore. When I was working it, when I was around it 24/7, I just didn't want to do it anymore. I wanted to do anything else to get away from work. And I've never gotten over it.
I don't think either of us are anywhere near the avid gamer we used to be. You spent a lot more time in the trenches than I did. So I think that it's a much more profound effect on you. I think I play more games than you. But being there for the day-to-day retail end of that really kind of killed it for me a little bit too. I do admit.
So, I think it would be the same for me. I wrote less when I was a copywriter. I didn't write anything for fun.
So if you wrote your amazing, what do they call it, the Great American Novel, and got like extremely wealthy from it, would you find yourself writing less? I wonder about that. These very successful authors, and especially the ones that seem to take years to complete their projects, is it just because, like, gosh, now I want to go be a computer programmer? I'm sick of writing?
I don't know. I think you could probably find out about that on different writers' websites and things like that. I think there have been a few writers who were like, well, did my one. I'm out of here.
Yeah, kind of like the one-hit wonder in the musical world, right? Like, I've done something very few do. I've achieved much success, and now I'm out.
Well, for me, for instance, I kind of feel that there's one masterpiece in you. So, I mean, I guess if I was lucky enough to have that masterpiece the first time out, I'd be pretty happy just like, meh, I'm done. I did that. What's next?
I suppose once you got that masterpiece out, once you made that difference in the world, I guess you'd be in a much better situation. You'd feel fulfilled to a certain extent. So everything after that might be a bonus, you know what I mean? Unless you're a very driven person, you just have to go on to the next thing. I don't know. It's interesting to consider the balance between acquiring between consuming and producing, especially, I mean, I really can only relate to other geeks when we talk about this, other nerds, because I don't know how a sports nut rationalizes, like, all right, I'm like a 47-year-old sports fan. Whatever chance I might have had to excel at sports is long past. I'm going to sit here and watch these kids half my age run around and perform feats of athletic prowess that I could never hope to duplicate. However, on our side of the fence, I guess you could write at any age, couldn't you? I mean, I keep beating up writing because I know there's a lot more to, like, say, video game development than just like sitting down at a computer. And I don't want to belittle writers or say that there's low barrier to entrance, but if you have the talent, it's your own discipline and sitting down and coming up with the idea that's keeping you from embarking on that journey, isn't it?
Well, I guess you can embark on a journey, but if you're looking at any kind of commercial success, there's a huge hurdle in the advertising and in the publishing and all that kind of stuff.
It's a very crowded field, is it not?
Yeah, it is. There's a new number one bestseller on Amazon every few hours. So it's crowded. It's not at all like it was where in high school there was, what, two series? You were either reading Dragonlance or you were reading Forgotten Realms.
Yes, you were reading one of those two series put out by TSR. Yes.
What else was there?
You mean like fantasy stuff that we were reading? Yeah, I mean, actually, there were probably other series that were above our heads, but being little D&D dorks, right, that was pretty much it. There weren't like 15 really compelling fantasy series to choose from that we were aware of anyway. There might have been, and we just were missing the boat on those.
And now there's a lot. Jesus, there's more masterpieces, I think, now. I cannot tell you enough good things about The Name of the Wind. You should be reading that book. If you haven't already, you owe it to yourself. Same thing with Mistborn. Mistborn was amazing. Like, I really enjoyed that. It was kind of a slog at first. Like, I think you remember me saying it started off slow. Once it took that turn, I was just like, wow. There's probably, I mean, Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire, you know, however you want to refer to it. That's pretty good writing.
It really is. And here we've got a double whammy. As a consumer, you've got a nearly limitless choice or an overwhelming amount of choice, let's say, in what you can read. And as somebody who aspires to write, you've got, I guess, competition. Like, wow, how do you, one, dare step into such a crowded field? And two, presume that you have an original idea when there are thousands of great ideas already out there on display. I mean, I often wonder, at a certain point, are we going to run out of fresh ideas? I mean, are you going to be able to help retreading somebody's already played out idea?
I am pretty certain at this point everything we do is just new presentation of old ideas. I don't think you can actually come up with an original, unique concept anymore.
Maybe that stays in a lot of people's hands. Like, they spend their whole life trying to come up with a brand new concept instead of just doing a new variation on an existing concept. Because really, in music and art, isn't it always the case that you're building on what came before? So is there anything so criminal about building on the foundation upon which you're standing?
I don't think there is. I don't think, once upon a time, the second guy to paint on a cave, everybody was like, oh, you're painting on a cave. That's been done. I mean,
so let's see. I think we've identified a couple of barriers to motivation. One, you've got to get your consumption in check. You can't build a bridge if you're too busy crossing and admiring everybody else's, right? Two, you can't let your fear of not being the next Mozart prevent you from writing some really cool chiptunes. And three, you've got to have some self-discipline. If you, in any creative endeavor, you've got to sit down. At a certain point, it's great to daydream about it. It's great to talk to your friends about it. It's great to imagine how cool it is. But I think you've got to sit yourself down and put in the work, because even if you love it, it's still work. And just like you said, you know, selling video games made you kind of despise them a little bit. Maybe sitting down and writing or creating music or creating artwork makes you love it a little bit less because it's now taking on that work aspect. But if you can't overcome those three things, you're going to stay unmotivated, I guess. And you're going to forever be the person watching a panel at a convention, say, as opposed to putting one on. If I may toot our horn ever so subtly. So let's finish up by kind of imparting a little advice or I'll try to impart advice, and if you think it's bad advice, feel free to stop me. I would suggest that anybody in our, what do you want to call it, subculture or genre of humanity, if that's even a correct way to put it, should consider having a creative thing in their life. Like for the moment, this podcast, it's hardly world beating. It's hardly reaching a massive audience. But man, every week we sit down, we record, we create this podcast. I have fun. I think you do too. And I feel a sense of accomplishment every week. I feel like I'm creating. And maybe this is keeping me from like doing something really, really great, but I don't think so. I think if anything, this is motivating me to do other stuff. And it all came down to, and let's give credit where it's due, it all came down to our buddy Rick saying, man, let's just do it. You know, just kind of kicking us in the butt. And we all jumped on board. And here we are, man. I mean, we're doing a podcast every week. We've been doing it for quite a while now.
Can't believe we're at 82.
I know. It's hard to believe we're in our 82nd episode already. And I really recommend to anybody, be it a podcast or really whatever it is that you want to do in the way of a creative endeavor, do it. Just take the first step, even if it's for your own enjoyment. Really, our audience doesn't extend much beyond us, let's be frank. So that's a bit of an exaggeration. I'm being a little too self-deprecating. But what do you think, Ben? I mean, do you think this, the Nerdtravaganza podcast, has sort of helped us achieve a measure of balance between consuming and producing as geeks?
For me, it's been motivational, but it's also taken up a lot of time that I would have used on, I might possibly could have used on my other means of creativity. Like I might have had my Hobbit 4 Return of Glamdring like halfway finished if I hadn't been doing this. But I will also say that the process of creation, I think, lends itself to more creation. So without it, I don't know if I would have written another word at all. I'd probably just be like level 95 in a while.
Exactly. Sometimes when I'm doing the editing and I'm putting in the work for the podcast, I'm like, man, I could be doing X, Y, and Z. But then I look at my track record. No. Odds are, if the past is any indication of future performance, odds are I'd also be level 90 and we'd be like raiding some boss in WoW right now. So I'm with you, man. I think whether it leads to more creative activity or not, I think it's worth it for you to put in the work, dear listener or listeners, to create something, to have something in your life that you can call yours that you make on a regular basis, or that you just that one masterpiece that you put out there.
I don't even think it has to be a masterpiece. I think just creating, I think just being a producer is hugely important. Even if it sucks, you know, just try it again.
Yeah. Producing makes you feel like you're contributing to society as opposed to just consuming that which society produces for you, you know? And we're talking about really non-essential stuff here, podcasts, sci-fi, you know, fantasy, but still the sense of accomplishment and contribution is there. So let's wrap it up with this, Brian. If you could make anything, like if you could achieve notoriety for creating anything, what would it be?
I have a really good religious theme fantasy based story in mind. I'd love to actually get that trilogy out one of these days.
Cool. We'll take it offline and get it going after the after the show. But you mean to say you have an idea for a series of novels, and that would be your dream, would be to put those out?
Yep. And you?
You know, honestly, my dream would always be to, whenever I dream of like writing a cool book, it's only because I would rather see I want to see it adapted to film. I have zero talent for this. I've never even explored that. But if I achieved notoriety for anything, it would be a film, or, you know, a film adaptation of something I wrote or created. Film has just always really been powerful for me, a powerful way to tell stories. And I watch movies, and half the time I find myself off on a tangent, imagining how they could have done things differently. Not that I'm any kind of great genius, but you know, that's just how my mind works. So yeah, let's get your novels written, and then I'll use my Hollywood connections to get them adapted to film.
Jeremy Piven plays the priest.
Cool. You're writing with actors in mind. I like it. I like where we're going with this. Okay. So let's round things out with our tips for getting motivated. And full disclosure, we're barely motivated ourselves, so take these with a grain of salt. But if they help you, audience members, so much the better. Brian, go first. How do you get jazzed? How do you get motivated to create something?
For 1 week, just keep like a punch card, like you're clocking in and out whenever you play video games. At the end of that week, add it up, and the next week, just spend half as much on video games and do half painting, writing, singing, learning the guitar, whatever you want. These things aren't... Some people are greatly talented at them, but for the most part, any schmuck can learn them. So if you spend that much time doing it, I think you will learn. You may never be Eddie Van Halen on the guitar, but you'll learn to play the guitar. You may never be Patrick Rothfuss writing, but you can write. Just stop pissing your time away.
Very sound advice, sir. Very well put. My piece of advice is, and this is going to maybe seem a little weird, but bear with me. Change your routine. Change your environment. I'm not even talking about setting aside time to do the thing you want to do, but you'd be surprised how much of a rut or how much of a rhythm you get into in life. So if you come home and there's the same stack of books in the corner and the same, you know, pile of clothes over there and things are arranged the same way over and over and over, change it. Just sit one day, just go on a cleaning spree or a reorganization spree. You'd be shocked how much your perspective on the world changes when your perspective on your bedroom changes. Like, I think everything begins with novelty and reminding yourself that you live in a dynamic, non-static world and that you can affect change. Don't be in a rut in your life, and you won't be in a rut in your creative endeavors, is, I guess, what I'd say. That's my bottom line. And that's it. That's all the advice I have to offer. Anything else before we take our audience out of here, sir?
Nope.
Cool. Well, if you find yourself in a creative rut and want some inspiration, want to do some good old-fashioned consuming, I highly recommend that you head over to iTunes and download our podcast, subscribe, rate it favorably, and write us an awesome review. It'd be good writing practice to get you in the habit of writing. As well, check us out on Stitcher if you're more into a streaming solution.
Don't forget, while you're pissing away your time in front of Facebook, to like us on Facebook and join our little insider private group for all kinds of other great ways to piss away even more time. Plus one us on Google Plus, follow us on Twitter, do whatever that thing is that we make fun of on Instagram. I think that's it.
And when you're done spending time with us on all those social media outlets, why not pop over to our highly motivational webpage, nerdtravaganza.com, and having taken inspiration from that site, write us an inspired email at nerdtravaganza@gmail.com. We hope to hear from you. And until then, stay motivated.